Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the prophets of cancer right after this. You know, many of the lessons that you hear on the Law Hour are just a small part of our two-week school on courtroom strategy and procedure. And this school includes lessons that range from what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you receive a complaint, a summons, or a citation. And you'll learn how to make a chronology of the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, just like the police do. And you'll learn how to conduct a hearing, present evidence, cross-examine witnesses, ask questions, make opening and closing statements, enter exhibits into evidence, write motions, briefs, affidavits, and asseverations. And we don't just cover what goes on in the courtroom. You'll learn preliminary procedures, arraignments, bail setting, what papers to file, how to put in exculpatory evidence into the record, how to present your legal and lawful positions, and what issues are appealable, and how to preserve those appealable issues for appellate review. Now, there are 28 essential elements to master in courtroom strategy and procedure, and you'll learn all of them here at the law school in this class. If you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, then why don't you call us direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. And remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. It's free. It doesn't cost anything. You can download a copy from our archives page on our website at georgegordon.org or georgegordon.com. Now, our school courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package or download it directly right off the internet. Hey, we're talking about this thing of murder by injection. Murder by injection. Actually, I've said that it's kind of a misnomer. The book's got one chapter in here on vaccination or injection, but it's a who's who on who's doing what to who and talks about the interconnecting boards of directors. And of the people, the personalities that are behind this cancer profit monopoly headed by the Rockefellers, the Rockefeller Trust. And it's how it's been going on for 100 years. Well, John D. Rockefeller got the ball rolling clear back at the turn of the century. This thing has worked perfectly. I mean, this thing is, if you're talking about the perfect crime, cancer is the perfect crime. It has worked for 100 years. It has moved cancer from an innocuous disease that didn't bother hardly anybody, 1 in 33 in 1900, until today. It is the second biggest killer in America. Now, 750,000 people are going to die this year from heart attack and stroke. Cancer is going to kill 500,000. Well, hell, only 2.6 million people are going to die this year. So, 1.25 million of them, half of all the people who are going to die from every cause, are going to be killed by these two killers, heart attack, that is cardiovascular disease, and cancer. Both of those are preventable. And both of them have a cause, and the cause is well known. The medical literature is replete with the causes, but medical doctors cannot reveal to you the cause, and they can't treat the cause. Absolutely cannot. And if they do, they'll be disbarred, or in the case, their license will be taken away from. We'll take a look at that here in a moment. The record of the cut, slash, and burn treatments were routinely distorted and falsified. Dr. Hardin James, he's a professor of medical physics at the University of California in Berkeley, addressed the American Cancer Society Science Writers Conference in 1969, and he revealed at that time, think of this, 40 years ago, he revealed that the worst cancer cases were usually termed inoperable, and they're deliberately left untreated. The published cancer studies of cures or remissions are the sweetheart cases, which had a high rate of recovery. Nevertheless, Dr. James reported the life expectancy of these untreated cases was actually greater than the life expectancy of those who were treated. Let me underline that, and let's hit that one again. The life expectancy of somebody who has cancer and is untreated was actually greater than the life expectancy of those who were treated. Now, here's what this means. You get cancer. Under ordinary circumstances, without treatment, you're going to die. That everybody is pretty familiar with. I think everybody could understand that. I had an old buddy, and he died here a couple of years ago from cancer. But when he was diagnosed with cancer, Rich said, okay. And he left it alone. He didn't get any treatment at all. And he lived for a little over 6 years. Now remember, if you go through cancer treatment and you live for 5 years, they call it a cure. Even though you still have tumors and you still have the cancer, if you have not died from the time you were diagnosed until 5 years has gone by, they call that a cure. That's preposterous poppycock. If you still have cancer, well, then you have not been cured. So Richard, he didn't do anything to it, and he lasted for 6 years. He finally died from cancer. Now, if you have cancer, there are 14 known cures. There may be more than that, but that's what I know of. And here in the book, in the chapter on the prophets of cancer, Eustace Mullins lists 7 of those cancer cures. In 1988, Eustace Mullins knew of 7 cancer cures. Here's the kicker. Almost all of these cancer cures, not all now, but almost all, I think 10 out of the 14, have been discovered by medical doctors. People who are licensed, bonded, and insured. They've been to medical school. They're allopathic medical doctors. They're the ones that have discovered 10 out of the 14. So it isn't that the medical literature, that the allopathic medical doctors over here don't know how to cure cancer. They know full well how to cure it. That's the criminal part of this whole escapade. It'd be one thing if they were telling you the truth that, well, we just don't know what causes cancer. I read to you a little earlier, it's caused by sugar. Sugar. We Americans consume so much sugar, we're almost guaranteed of cancer. Now, it isn't sugar alone that causes cancer, but it's one of the primary fuel. The other day, I have a family relative here, kind of a shirt-tail relative by marriage, who was just released from the hospital and sent home to die. He has cancer, 3 or 4 places in his body, just like Ted Kennedy. You know, he just died from cancer. Now, Ted Kennedy, at his advanced age, with cancer of the brain, could have been cured with Laetril. Indian black salve isn't going to do anything for your brain cancer, but Laetril would. Senator Ted Kennedy, who just died here the other day, is suffering from an overconsumption of sugar, which is what feeds the cancer. So number one, you got to take all the sugar away. God, that's a killer. And then number two, you got to feed your body with vitamin B17. That's what he was lacking. He died of a vitamin deficiency, is what really occurred there. And then his doctors worked mightily, and Kennedy battled valiantly his cancer. What the hell did he do to battle valiantly? Took a bunch of drugs and pills and finally died from the disease that he helped create and helps the medical monopoly perpetuate. Now, despite Dr. James' revelations that you'll live longer, now just remember this. Remember this if you don't can't remember anything else. When you're diagnosed with cancer, if you do absolutely nothing, you will live longer than if you go through the chemotherapy, the cut, burn, and poison. Now, on average, doesn't mean every single case, but on average, you'll live longer if you do nothing. Now, in Israel, here's another little kicker here for you. In Israel, some years back now, 25, 30 years ago, but they had a doctor's strike. They have socialized medicine over there in Israel, say. They had a doctor's strike, and when the doctors went on strike for 6 weeks, the death rate in Israel dropped by 25%. Now, what in the hell does that tell you? You know, if you people would just stay the hell away from those allopathic medical doctors, 25% of you would live. Tells me that the doctors in Israel, at least, are killing 25% of the patients. Despite Dr. James' revelations, the hospitals continued to pick and choose which cases of cancer that they would treat. Even the esteemed cancer center noted that its policy is not to accept some terminal cases. The patients are politely referred to a death hospice where they can die. In fact, such turnaways may have been a boon to the dying, as the treatment they would have undergone at Memorial Hospital would have made Count Dracula drool with envy. Dr. Ralph Moss revealed some of the prevalent surgical techniques there. He reported that cancer of the head and neck was treated by an operation called the commando, after a combat technique used by commandos in World War II. It called for the entire removal of the jaw. Pancreatic cancer was treated by removal of most of the area organs near the infected gland. The survival rate, despite this drastic treatment, remained the same, a mere 3%. In 1948, Dr. Alex Brunschweig invented an operation called total excenteration, which called for the removal of the rectum, stomach, bladder, liver, ureter, all internal reproductive organs, the pelvic floor and wall, pancreas, spleen, colon, and many blood vessels. Want to hear that story again? Dr. Brunschweig himself called this hollowing out technique a brutal and cruel procedure. Published in the New York Times, August 8, 1969. The epitome of the mad doctor operations was known as hemicorporectomy. Originated by Dr. Theodore Miller of the Cancer Center, it involved cutting off everything below the pelvis. These techniques are more than reminiscent of certain procedures used by communist revolutionaries in Latin America. The Sandinista revolutionaries were inspired by their leader's poetic dictum that liberty is not conquered with flowers, but with bullets. And that is why we use the vest cut, the gourd cut, and the bloomers cut. In the vest cut, the victim's head was lopped off with a machete, and his arms were severed at the shoulders. In the gourd cut, the victim had the top of his head lopped off. The bloomer's cut called for hacking both legs off at the knees, leaving the victim to bleed to death. The records of the mad doctor syndrome would fill several books. One special congressional report followed some 31 human guinea pig experiments over a 30-year period. The committee chaired by Woodward D. Markey, Democrat of Massachusetts, gave his comment that his findings shock the conscience and represent a black mark on the history of medical research. The report showed that from 1945 to 47 in the Manhattan Project, scientists routinely injected 18 patients with plutonium. From 1961 to 1965 at MIT, 20 elderly patients were injected or fed radium or thorium. From 1946 to 47 at the University of Rochester, 6 patients who had good kidneys were injected with uranium salts to determine the concentration that might produce kidney injury. From 1953 to 1957 at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston, 12 patients were injected with uranium to determine the dosage that would cause kidney injury. From 1963 to 71, 67 inmates of Oregon State Prison and 64 inmates of Washington State Prison had x-rays on their testes to determine the effect of radiation on human fertility. From 1963 to 1965 at the National Reactor Test Station of the Atomic Energy Commission in Idaho, radioactive iodine was purposely released on 7 separate occasions, and 7 human subjects purposely drank milk from cows grazed on iodine-contaminated land. From 1961 to 63 at the University of Chicago and the Argonne National Laboratory in Illinois, 102 human subjects were fed fallout from the Nevada test site, with radioactive simulated fallout particles and solutions of radioactive cesium and strontium. During the late 50s, 12 patients at Presbyterian and Montefiore hospitals in New York were injected with radioactive calcium and strontium cancer particles. Oregon State Prison gave radium doses of 600 roentgens in single exposures on the reproductive organs when the safe dose was 5 roentgens per year. For a decade, scientists were fed radioactive materials so that other scientists could calibrate their instruments for measuring these doses. Whatever kicks the mad doctors may have gotten from these experiments, the cancer rate remained the same or increased. Congressman Widener pointed out that information has been brought to my attention, showing that 20 years ago, in 1957, the same proportion of cancer cases, 1 in 3, was being cured. This raises the question why, despite all of the money, the effort devoted to cancer research, the cure rate has remained the same. Now, despite such criticism, the National Cancer Institute continues to waste billions of dollars on worthless programs. It was reported that George R. Pettit of the University of Arizona at Tempe had spent 6 years and $100,000 extracting chemicals from 250,000 butterflies as part of an NCI program. There were no identifiable results. Other researchers continued to find the war on cancer a profitable war. The Saturday Review reported in its issue of December 2, 1961, that a prominent financial supporter of the American Cancer Society in Massachusetts was upset when he could never find the state director in his office. He was finally told that the director, James V. Lavin, was probably in his other office across the street, where he ran a private fundraising company, the James C. Lavin Company. He represented a select group of clients. Now, when stung by this revelation, the executive vice president of the American Cancer Society, Lane W. Adams, wrote a letter to Saturday Review on June 6, 1962, as follows. It said, quote, "The arrangement by which James C. Lavin operated private fundraising while serving as executive director of the Massachusetts American Cancer Society was known by the National Society. Adams said that Lavin's salary was $17,000 plus another $10,000 a year paid to his company. Saul Naglin of the Lavin Company was the controller of the Massachusetts branch of the American Cancer Society for a number of years. The yearly overhead of the Massachusetts branch was $548,000 in 1960, with total income of $1.1 million. Adams' letter also boasted that, "We helped support the research of Dr. Sterling Schwartz, injecting human leukemia brain extract in human subjects. Dr. Chester Southam injecting live cancer cells beneath the skin of human beings." Adams, who had been with the American Cancer Society since 1948, now heads the national offices at 90 Park Avenue in New York City. He received the Albert Lasker Public Service Award from the American Cancer Society. He's also vice president of Zion First National Bank in Salt Lake City, Utah, director of Paul Revere Investors, and the Energy Fund. Lavin's attorney, James Mountzos, was secretary of the Massachusetts ACS and also served on the national board. Now, in 1978, the American Cancer Society had a $140 million income, in which less than 30% was spent on cancer research. 56% went to cover administrative costs. The Society had $200 million in investments. Before the Bobst-Lasker takeover in 1944, its income had never gone past $600,000 a year. The following year, it raised $5 million. In 1982, Alan Sonenshein published a warning. He said, "Watch out. The American Cancer Society may be hazardous to your health." In 1955, in a power move, the American Cancer Society took over all research from the National Research Council, executing a brilliant coup by creating a new science advisory council to represent American hospitals and universities. Dr. Samuel Epstein, in his book, The Politics of Cancer, noted that apart from being uninvolved in cancer prevention, other than to a limited extent, such as tobacco, senior ACS officials have developed for the society a reputation of being indifferent, if not actively hostile, to regulatory needs for the prevention of exposure to carcinogenic chemicals in the general environment and in the workplace. Epstein reported that the American Cancer Society opposed regulation of such potential carcinogens as red dye number 2, TRIS and DES, and ACS refused to support the Clean Water Act and blamed victims for cancer. The EPA had reported that indoor pollutants caused 6,000 cancer deaths a year and that 38 million Americans drank water with unsafe levels of lead and other toxic matter, including chlorine byproducts. DES was widely used from the 1940s to the early 1970s as a synthetic female hormone, which was routinely prescribed by doctors to prevent miscarriage. It was never tested for possible side effects, nor did anyone know what those side effects might be. Finally, a student at the University of Chicago Medical Center showed that not only was it ineffective in preventing miscarriage, but it might have side effects. This finding failed to halt its use. In 1972, its long-term effects began to appear. Cancer of the breast, with vaginal cancer in daughters of those patients treated with DES, as well as other genital malformations and abnormalities. It was also linked to liver damage. Now, Lee Edson, in The Cancer Ripoff, notes that 74 private companies near the National Institute of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, were charging the government 144% overhead plus 9% profit to perform virus research. Nixon had placed his protege, Dr. Frank Rauscher, in charge of the NCI. He was a virologist who began to promote chemotherapy as the answer to cancer. Dr. Rauscher claimed that the NCI chemotherapy program has provided effective treatment for cancer patients all over this country and the world. This claim was promptly challenged by Dean Burke, the head of the psychochemical section of the NCI, pointing out that virtually all of the chemotherapeutic agents now approved by the FDA for use or testing in human cancer patients are highly toxic to markedly immunosuppressive and highly carcinogenic in rats and mice, themselves producing cancers in a wide variety of body organs. Despite this criticism, Rauscher was then named head of the President's National Cancer Advisory Board. The side effects of chemotherapy have been graphically described by many of its victims. The terrible nausea, loss of hair, sudden weight loss, and many other adverse factors. A book written by M. Mora, Choices, Realistic Alternatives in Cancer Treatment, published by Avon Press in 1980, reports favorably on all of the establishment's cut, slash, and burn techniques. Mora mentions diet only in its relation to nausea from chemotherapy. He soberly advises that you let someone else do the cooking so that the smell of food will not nauseate you. Mora gave no advice on how to serve food without smell. Since Memorial Sloan Kettering's first benefactor, James Ewing, dosed himself to death with radium in 1913, it has remained the treatment of choice at this cancer center. The New York Times noted on July 4, 1979, that 70% of all cancer patients at Memorial receive radiation treatments at a charge of $500,000 a year. It now performs 11,000 surgical procedures and 65,000 radium treatments a year. In 1980, Memorial bought all new equipment for its radium treatment, an expenditure of $4.5 million. However, radium treatment continues to be a horrifying treatment in its side effects. Now, in 1937, Dr. Percy Furnival, a prominent surgeon at London Hospital, diagnosed his own tumor as cancer. On February 26, 1938, he published in the British Medical Journal an impassioned plea as a result of his experience. Tragedies from radium treatment are of frequent occurrence, and the publicity given to radium treatment of cancer is a disgrace to the Minister of Health and the vested interests which charge fantastic prices for this body-destroying substance. I do not wish my worst enemy, the prolonged hell that I have been through with radium neuritis and myalgia over the past 6 months. This account of my own case is a plea for a very careful consideration of all of the factors before deciding which is the most suitable form of treatment. He died shortly thereafter, yet his plea had absolutely no effect on the continued use of radium treatments for cancer. The late Senator Hubert Humphrey, who died of cancer, is often cited as an advertisement for radium treatment. Jane Brody, in her New York Times book, You Can Fight Cancer and Win, co-authored with the American Cancer Society Vice President Holub in 1977, cites Hubert Humphrey as a famous beneficiary of modern radiotherapy. She glosses over the fact that this famous beneficiary was totally disillusioned with radium therapy before his death. In 1973, he was found to have cancer of the bladder. He was treated by X-ray, and in 1976, his physician, Dr. Dabney Jarman, triumphantly reported that as far as we're concerned, the senator is cured. That was published in the New York Times, October 6, 1976. Humphrey continued to wither away, undergoing more chemotherapy until he flatly refused to go back to Memorial Cancer Center for more treatment. quoted in the Daily News on January 14, 1978, he called chemotherapy bottled death. Now, that was Senator Hubert Humphrey, who underwent the treatment. Bottled death. The Washington Post in February 1988 ran a story, Cancer Treatment Toxic. We are spared very little as we see healthy-looking people turned before our eyes into shaking, shivering, nauseated bundles of misery. The successes, although few, have been dramatic. One factor which has been consistently ignored in the development of cancer is the role of unusual stress. We all face daily stresses in our lives, with which we cope as best we can. However, unusual and prolonged stress places a greater strain on our system than we may be able to cope with. This is particularly true today, when sinister hidden forces poison all of our communications with their shadowy propaganda while assuring us that they stand only for compassion and caring. A writer named Morley Roberts advanced a startling theory of cancer in 1926. An English scientist, Roberts belonged to no known school of thought, and because of his independence, his works have been largely ignored. His theory of organic materialism advances the following points. Let me put a mark right here in the margin and give you a mid-course reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. We are reviewing a chapter in the book. This is Chapter 3, The Prophets of Cancer, in the book titled Murder by Injection, put out by Eustace Mullins. His name is spelled Eustace That's Eustace Mullins, M-U-L-L-I-N-S, Murder by Injection, The Story of the Medical Conspiracy Against America. Now, cancer is just one facet of the medical conspiracy. For a copy of the book, I would recommend that you go to bravenewbookstore.com. bravenewbookstore.com. They're located at 1904 Guadalupe Street, Suite B in Austin, Texas. The zip code 78705. If you got your pen paper out there now, and you're an old guy listening on the radio and you don't have a computer, that address again is 1904 Guadalupe Street, spelled G-U-A-D-A-L-U-P-E. It's an odd name, Guadalupe Street. Tain't odd to Hispanics, but it's odd to us Anglos. Guadalupe Street, Suite B, Austin, Texas. Austin, Texas. 78705. Again, that's 78705. I got a phone down there, too. I always like to call people first and see if they're still in business and see if they're if they've got the book. I mean, hell, why don't you just call them? 512-480-2503. Again, that's area code 512-480-2503. Just call them up and say, hey, you. Hey, have you got a copy of this book called Murder by Injection? And I'll just bet you that they'll say, yep, we've got quite a few of those. We buy them by the case. And if they don't, he'll say, well, I can get it for you. I'll find it. Give me your name and number. I'll go out and get that book for you. Now, going on here, remember this guy, his name, Morley Roberts. He's an English scientist. This is back in 1926. Okay, going on with the story. It's called Malignancy and Evolution. Malignancy is the diversion of energy from high differentiation into the proliferation of low-grade epithelia, which can endure irritation but only differentiate with difficulty. By God, now that guy's a scientist, isn't he? Now, what does that mean? Malignancy and evolution. Epithelioma, a common form of cancer, is the multiplication of cells of the simplest type in the body, which, like those of the outer skin, the epidermis, are comparably short-lived and unable to differentiate. An organism afflicted with cancer is unable to differentiate to meet the conditions of its existence because its energy has been diverted into multiplying low-grade cells. Cancer is the proliferation of low-grade cell colonies in the organism. They migrate through the body seeking a place for themselves, although they have no function. Wherever they gather, they rob the higher-grade cells of nourishment, where they are gathered into cell colonies as the organs of the body. These organs are choked off and starve, eventually causing the death of the organism. The modern state is a malignant organism dedicated to the proliferation of lower-grade units at the expense of higher, more differentiated types. The more productive organisms are heavily taxed to support large numbers of non-productive and poorly differentiated growths. The steadily increasing strain on the productive members of the state causes their premature death, just as the proliferation of the lower-grade cells in the cancerous organism kills the higher differentiated cells. Roberts posits this question. May we go further and even say that the common tendency to malignancy is the result of sociology refinements which ask for a higher role for epithelia. Morley Roberts posited a theory of the development of the organism in which other cells begin to gather around the excretory cell colonies of primitive organisms, and subsequently these cell colonies begin to give off secretions which were poisonous to the organism. So in self-defense, the organism threw up fortifications or other cell colonies around the vicious presence, which in time became part of the organism, and whose secretions became useful to it. Roberts calls this a theory of the development of the organs of the body. I got to pause here. It hasn't occurred to these fools who cannot cure cancer that the real origin of the organs of your body is that they were created. They are extremely complex. And the interrelationship of all of the organs of your body, all working together, is the theory of alternative medicine's cure for cancer. That's why diet works and chemotherapy doesn't. It's because your body needs nutrients. And when your body is starved, like Ted Kennedy, of B17, cancer develops. Kennedy could have cured that cancer with Laetril. And the crazy part of it is, Kennedy was a part of the very institution, the Rockefellers, that killed him. I'm sure the guy was ignorant. He went to modern medical orthodoxy for his cure. You know, he's probably just an ignorant minion like most other people are. But many of these people know better. Many of them know better. And they deliberately suppress the truth in the interests of money and profits. And you can rest assured that those at the top of the totem pole over here, from the Rockefeller Trust down, know full well what they're doing. And that's why there is no cancer cure, at least not out there for public consumption. Now, this guy, Eustace Mullins, has 7 cancer cures here in this section. In the next program, I'm going to cover those 7 cancer cures for you. And then I'll add the other 7 from my files. Then I'll show you that, you know, if you're of a mind to. Now, I'm not here telling you to go cure your cancer by some alternative, unorthodox means. You know, the orthodoxy of America is you go to the American Medical Society and their licensed members who have the sole and complete rights to treat cancer. And anybody else that treats cancer is going to be prosecuted for practicing medicine without a license. All right, now, you can treat yourself, but I can't treat you. So what happens here? We're all part and parcel of our heredity. And all we know is what comes into our minds through our 5 senses. And through your 5 senses, your grasp and understanding of medical treatments and medical orthodoxy is what makes up your beliefs concerning this medical phenomenon that we call cancer therapy. It's a phenomenon. Now, there's 14 ways to go about this. Cut, burn, and poison are 3 of the 14 ways. Cut, burn, and poison does work. I don't deny it. If you can treat anybody with radiation, then the guy survives it. It's a treatment, and it worked. Or at least the guy's body was so strong that even the radiation couldn't kill him. It may be that he survived in spite of the radiation, but the moral of the story is when they come up with 3%, that's not a very high percentage, but, you know, 3%. It's 3%. So we'll rank that, and we'll give them credit for curing 3% of cancers with radiation. Chemotherapy does a few more. Surgery does a few more. I mean, after all, if you've got a tumor and you cut it off and you don't die from the surgery and you survive for 5 years, that's their definition of a cure. Now, if that's what you're looking for, hell, you know, get after it. Don't let me get in your way. Now, if on the other hand, you don't want the chemotherapy, the radiation, you don't want the misery that goes along with it, your hair falling out, and so on, sickness, nausea. Let's suppose that you took this Laetril and you didn't have your hair fall out and you didn't have any nausea. and the tumor just shrank and went away. We haven't got a clue as to why. Would that interest you? Would you be amenable to that form of treatment? See, I can't recommend that. I'm not a doctor. And you can forget about free speech. If I came on the air and I said, hey, listen, take Laetrile and cure your cancer. My God, I'm diagnosing and treating and somebody's going to get right after me. Now, as an educator, I can come here and I can tell you, as a reporter, I can say, did you know that? And I can direct you to the sources of information, and then you personally, not your representative, not your doctor, not your guardian now, but you personally, you can do something for yourself. Hubert Humphrey hired a doctor. He said, I'm medically incompetent and unable to treat my cancer. So he hired a guardian. The guardian, a medical doctor, an allopathic physician, said radiation's what you need. He gave it to him until Humphrey finally said, I ain't going back for any more. Just let me die. The radiation therapy didn't work. That's the bottom line. The guy died. He had cancer. We treated it with radiation, and he died. And he didn't live 5 years. Okay? Failure. Now, 63% of the time, it will be a failure. And yet, no one outside the medical establishment, outside the FDA, the American Medical Society, or the National Cancer Society, dares to offer any other solution to this malaise. And hell, yours truly here. I'm not offering any cancer cures. Perish the thought. This is a monopoly. These guys own it. It's copyrighted and trademarked. That word cancer belongs to the American Medical Society, or American Medical Association, copyrighted. They own it, just like Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, Chevrolet, Corvette. Those are copyrighted trade names. Now, if you want to treat the botch of Egypt, you can do that. That comes from the Bible. You can go to somebody and say, gee, why don't you think about nutrition? Why don't you eat better? Why don't you obey God and keep His commandments? Why don't you practice these 19 health laws? Now, that we can do. Now, Mullins here has 7 of the 14 cancer cures in Chapter 3. We'll come to that in a little bit. The role of nutrition in cancer has yet to be seriously researched by the billion-dollar boondoggles of the National Cancer Institute and the Rockefellers. Yet in 1887, an Albany, New York physician, his name was Ephraim Cutter, M.D., wrote a book called Diet in Cancer, in which he stated, cancer is a disease of nutrition. I'm going to underline that. Cancer is a disease of nutrition. Hey, listen, I've mentioned this before. Let me mention it again. In order for you to get sick, you have to violate one or more of the 19 health laws of the Bible. Nutrition is one of those. Now, if you get sick, it's only caused by one of two agents. First is starvation. Second is toxicity. So what that says in layman's language, if you're a truck driver and you didn't understand toxicity, that's poison. And we call those carcinogens. Cigarette smoke is a carcinogen. You're poisoning yourself as you're driving down the road, dear Buster, by smoking those Marlboros. You are putting these carcinogens into your body. You're poisoning yourself. That'll cause cancer. Causes a lot of other diseases. Metabolic breakdown. The second is you have a nutritional deficiency. You don't have the building blocks that your body needs to repair itself. You're lacking in vitamin B17. You're lacking in vitamin C. Now, if you just stop taking vitamin C, you will develop scurvy. See, the vitamin C is also helpful in curing cancer, but you won't live long enough to develop and die from cancer. You develop scurvy first and die from scurvy. So when you have vitamin C deficiency, you develop scurvy. To cure scurvy, we give you vitamin C. Can you see how simple that is? All right. Well, then, has it ever occurred to anybody that all disease is caused by? Let's just entertain the idea. All disease, all 450 of these symptoms that we call disease, scurvy is a symptom. And so somebody came along and said, good, let's copyright and patent that. Let's make a drug for it. You go to the doctor, he says, oh my God, you've got scurvy. So you say, here, take this prescription. You go down to the drugstore, he gives you a prescription. You're paying $1 or $2 for every pill. What are you buying? Vitamin C? Do they tell you this is vitamin C? No. What the hell would we do that for? We want to sell pills. That's what the drug interests do. If you've got pain, we sell you a little morphine. We're going to give you a pill that takes pain away. Doesn't cure the disease. Doesn't restore your body's metabolic processes. All we're going to do is take the pain away. Cover or mask the symptom. Hippocrates coined the word dietia, meaning a way of life, which is what a diet is. In the classical world, meat meant the daily fare and referred to oats, barley, rye, wheat, fruit, and nuts. The confusion as to the meaning of the word meat occurs in translations of the Bible. In Genesis, it is stated, behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed, which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree, in the which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for meat. Hippocrates' advice to physicians was that they should first find out what food is given to a patient and who's giving it. The ongoing controversy over laetrile revolves around the fact that it is a substance called nitrilicide. In 1952, Dr. Ernest A. Krebs, Jr., a biochemist, discovered that cancer is caused by a deficiency of nitrilicides, which occur naturally in over 1,200 foods and plants. Animals usually instinctively seek out grasses and other plants which contain nitrilicides. Yet when humans do the same thing, they're attacked by federal agents. Some researchers believe that the adverse effects of carcinogens, radiation, and sunburn on the human is caused by the fact that they're suffering from poor nutrition. These nutrition experts argue that coal tar does not cause cancer and that the sun does not cause skin cancer. Rather, these conditions arise from the sun's effect upon the skin of a person who is consuming too much sugar, too much fat, too many dairy products. I'm going to underline dairy products. He's not whistling Dixie here. So you people don't have access to dairy products that are raw and natural. They're all homogenized and pasteurized. That makes them poison. So many times people say to me, my God, how can you drink that milk? I've been drinking it now for 25 years since I've been down here on the farm. I drink about a gallon of milk a day, every day. Why do I do that? It's because it's healthful and nutritious, but it's raw. If I drank a quart of pasteurized milk a day, it should kill me in 5 years or less. Hell, it almost killed me back in 1984. Fortunately, I had a doctor that understood the difference between raw milk and pasteurized milk. Going on, he says, the sun's rays create an acidic condition which causes these substances to rise to the surface of your skin, causing an irritation, which can then become a catalyst. It is noted that people in tropical countries who are exposed to strong sunlight rarely get skin cancer because they eat very little meat and fats. It was also discovered after the atomic bombing of Japanese civilians that those who were still eating their traditional diet of brown rice, sea salt, and miso vegetables were little damaged by the same amount of atomic radiation which killed those who were eating a more modern diet of fats and meat. Some experts note that they can detect cancer by the peculiar smell of a person in its early stages. It's the smell of decomposition. Others note that cancer can be detected by the greenish cast to the skin. The epidemic of prostate cancer among American men seems to be the result of a diet of rich foods with frequent ingestion of eggs, meat, and dairy products. The baked goods, I should say, pasteurized dairy products. The baked goods made with refined flour. A suggested remedy is a diet of fruit and rice, the same diet which is recommended to lower blood pressure, and which has been featured at Duke University for many years. Beef is said to be particularly dangerous for prostate and colon cancer. Nutritionists believe that cancer represents a reverse evolutionary process in which cells decompose or change back to a more primordial vegetable type of life. This corresponds in some ways with the theories of Morley Roberts. Here again is evolutionary philosophy. Now, these same evolutionary philosophers are the promoters of this thing called cancer and their brand of cancer treatment. Now, we've been listening to these evolutionary philosophers for 100 years, and the rate of cancer went from 1 in 33 to 1 in 2 in 100 years. Let's listen to these evolutionary philosophers as they explain to us how to cure it. So for 100 years, they've been explaining to us how they're going to cure cancer with science. And what have they delivered? Jesus made an observation one time. He said, "You will know them by their fruit." Now, if pious promises of a future cure is the fruit that you're looking for, stick with the program. God blarney, there's just no end to it. Now, if you're looking for a cure to cancer, now that's been around for 100 years. Hell, it's been around for 4,000 years. We never had a problem with cancer until the evolutionists, along with the allopathic medical physicians, came on the scene and said, "Hey, let's explain to you where you came from, what your purpose in life is, which is endless amusement." According to modern philosophy, the only purpose that you have in life is to amuse yourself. Endless amusement. That's all Americans are interested in. How do I amuse myself? It is notable that only 4% of the nation's medical schools offer a course in nutrition. This reflects the Rockefeller medical monopoly's obsession with drugs and its commitment to the allopathic school of medicine, as opposed to homeopathic or holistic medicine. Homeopathic or holistic medicine is into foods and nutrition. The thing that causes disease, boys and girls, starvation and poison. Just two ways to get sick. Starve yourself or poison yourself. There isn't any other way. Hey, I'm about out of time again. I'm going to have to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.